It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Won't be too much different than when I'm in the U.S. studio, although I just heard last night. It's 8 a.m. but it's 5th year in Europe. We're considered serious in real estate. This is the fourth investment strategy we're covering, private mortgage lending. Whether you're located in Europe, the U.S., or any other continent in this global village, even though the climate, the economy, and the currency you use, and even housing prices may be very different, still the principles of investing and the opportunities available to invest directly in real estate are universal. Several people asked me why I'm going to be in Europe. I jokingly responded that I wanted to visit some of the countries in the EU and specifically the Eurozone while they still exist in their current form. No, I'm not predicting the demise of the Eurozone, nor that some of the countries using the euro would return to their own currencies, nor am I predicting the demise of the EU. On the other hand, I'm also not predicting there won't be any changes in the next few years. Either way, I hope to visit a couple of the countries each year. So in the good old days, and yes, someday these will be the good old days. We'll look back and call them the good old days. Today, we'll cover the key differences of being a private mortgage lender in the U.S. or other parts of the world, and we'll try to answer many of the questions you might have about this investment strategy. And I'm just going to make sure that my sound here is not going to be duplicated. It is not, I hope. Our producer remembers to put up the chat window. I don't see it yet, Pete, so if you would get that up, that would be a big help. Let me refresh to see if it's coming up here. Anyway, and I'll try to answer some of the questions you might have about this investment strategy. Each of the four strategies for direct investment in real estate are great ways to generate passive cash flow that allows you to replace the income from your job. And yet, each of the strategies have some unique advantages and disadvantages. Okay, it looks like my chat window is not coming up yet, Pete, so you have to get that up. And there are unique advantages, disadvantages. We'll cover that on each of these shows. And obviously, the other ones you can hear on the archive, which you'll find on www.wealthdna.us. Today's topic is near and dear to me, since it's one of the core strategies we use in the residential real estate fund I manage. Hopefully that qualifies me to provide you some insights that you wouldn't get from your next-door neighbor, your handyman, your coworkers, or even your financial advisor. And I occasionally remind you, many people invest the way they do because they're following what others do. Since few people know about private mortgage lending, for that matter, few people have even heard of it, so it's very unlikely your neighbors or friends would recommend it. And very few financial advisors would tell you about it. Why? First, most people don't know about it. And secondly, investment advisors don't want you to move your money out of Wall Street or other financial markets, since they won't earn a commission if you invest in private mortgage loans. For that matter, financial advisors don't earn a commission if you invest in rental properties, fix and flips, or lease option properties. But I'm getting ahead of myself, which happens when we discuss an investment I really like. Today is July 9th, 2012. It's 8:04 a.m. in Arizona. It's 5:04 p.m. in continental Europe, or 17:04 if you prefer. You're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. This show airs every second and fourth Monday at 8 a.m. in Arizona. I certainly hope you can join us each time we air, but if you miss a show, you can hear it on the archives. Just go to www.wealthdna.us, where we list each of the shows, both upcoming and archived. This archive will be especially important today, since I won't cover some of the aspects we've talked about in earlier shows. If you didn't listen to those shows or you didn't take notes, you'll probably have to re-listen to get the total picture of investing in private mortgage loans. For those checking the U.S. equity markets, overall, a positive week last week, the U.S. markets are off to a negative start. Asia was down dramatically and Europe slightly down. But stocks are not our topic today. Today we're talking about investing in private mortgage loans. Okay, connect, get about 30 seconds. Huh, and then silence. Interesting. Okay, looks like we're getting some interruptions. My apologies. And again, I am dialing in remotely and I am in Europe, so we may be getting some delays in speech here. But I will keep going. And I will occasionally remind you that, I'm still seeing some delays. You're right. I'm sorry. On this show, we try to focus on the fundamentals of investing and spend much less time on what's happening in the news, the economy, and what's likely to happen in the next 6 months or a year. We want to make sure whether you listen live or you're listening to the archives 10 or 20 years later, you get significant value from each show. Although we'll focus on the fundamentals today, I'd first like to share an analysis my company did related to the recent trend in the Phoenix housing market prices. After this show is archived, you'll be able to access that analysis on wealthdna.us. You may recall Michael Orr's comments on the show in April that housing prices in the Phoenix area have increased dramatically, and he expects them to continue to increase between 2 to 5% per month for the next 6 to 12 months. Now, I didn't misstate that. He and I said 2 to 5% per month, not per year. Admittedly, 2 to 5% per year would be normal price increase, depending on inflation in the part of the world you happen to live in. When you hear numbers like 2 to 5% per month, you'd be inclined to think we're heading to the next housing bubble, but neither Michael Orr nor I think that's the case. The analysis we put together, incidentally, using the Cromford Reports data, looks at the price increases from the bottom, which is at the beginning of September 2011, through the beginning of June 2012. The data is shown in the presentation that you'll be able to access shortly. The overall change in the Phoenix housing prices during those 9 months is just over 29%. Wow. On an annual basis, by the way, that's nearly 40%. Those types of increases definitely bring back memories of the boom years from 2003 to 2006. And when reviewing the analysis, you'll see price increases of only 5.5% on pre-foreclosures, commonly known as short sales, all the way up to 25.8% on lender-owned properties. Now, for the mathematicians among our listeners, they've already noticed there's something wrong with that picture. Certainly, the average should be between 5 and 26%, so it can't possibly be 29%, or can it? And that's what the analysis is all about. The average price increase across these categories is, in reality, 17.1%. Okay, the phone connection is good. Thank you, thank you. Okay, so we may have a problem at your end, John. So we are having some problems, but it may not be at my end of it, interesting enough. So how do we get an average of 29 with those numbers? Well, the other 12.6% is due to a mix change. You see, back in September of 2011, the largest portion of sales, over 40%, were lender-owned properties, which were selling at only $62 per square foot. Now, in June of 2012, they're accounting for only 1/6 of all sales, so those low-priced properties are no longer such a big factor. So sales have shifted from lender-owned to normal properties, which sell for a much higher price, over $100 a square foot. What that means is 12.6% mix change means that even if prices did not go up in any one of those categories, the average selling price would have increased 12.6% just because fewer and fewer lender-owned properties were available. Now, let me ask one key question related to this analysis. and specifically for you as investors. And feel free to respond in the chat window below. And this time, I'm quite sure we do have the chat window working. Last time I checked, it was. Yep, chat window's open. Obviously, we're getting some chat messages in there. Here's the question. What drives the market, and specifically market prices? What drives the market, and specifically market prices? Feel free to put your answer into the chat window. No takers today? All right, let me give you three answers. First, supply and demand. You knew that. Fundamentally, market prices are driven by supply and demand. In Phoenix today, supply of houses is limited, and demand is high. The second factor is the media. It's far more likely that the media will focus on the 29% increase than to focus on the fact that prices actually only rose 17% and mix change contributed the other 12%. Some of you are probably thinking, no journalist would even have a clue what mix change is, let alone be able to compute it. And that's probably why you listen to the Wealth DNA radio show. Third factor is emotion. This is the biggie. You see, even if supply and demand are reasonably in balance, investors' emotions drive prices. And the media does have a big part in spreading the news, whether that news is good, bad, or inaccurate. So the media also affects that emotion. Now, the second two factors, the media and emotion, are particularly important. As more and more home buyers start hearing that prices have risen 29% or 40% on an annualized basis, you could see some panic buying. The effect of which, of course, is prices go up further, at least until supply increases. Okay, let's get back to our main topic, investing in private mortgage loans. Now, at the same time, I'm hoping that little backdrop gave you some idea of why I'm optimistic about the prospects for investing in real estate in general. It's much smoother sailing when you have a tailwind, specifically a tailwind of rising prices propelling you forward. Although it is possible to make money in real estate and private mortgage loans specifically when prices are dropping, it is more difficult. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Should you be investing in private mortgage loans? Now, if you're expecting me to give you a yes or no answer, you will be disappointed. If, on the other hand, you're looking for information on what it is, why it might or might not make sense for you, and what factors influence whether it's right or not right for you, then keep listening. That's what I'd love to cover today. Okay. I like that, John. Thank you. If you happen to be investing in the Phoenix area, I've already shared a key reason as to why it might make sense. We have a tailwind of rising prices. Note, key note here, I try to make sure we cover the fundamentals of investing, which we do, but there are times my own biases could get in the way. I could put in some comments or even the inflection of my voice, which could influence what you hear. Since I invest in residential real estate and specifically private mortgage lending, and happens to be one of my preferred strategies, that tone of voice or the details I cover might make it seem like I'm recommending the strategy for you. Be aware of it, listen for those biases, and try to take it as the factual information I'm trying to present. Regardless of the strategy I choose for the real estate fund I run, knowing about and understanding each of the four strategies will be beneficial for you to understand before you make your final decision which one is best for you. Now, if you choose the fifth strategy, which is doing nothing, then it won't help to blame me for making that choice. If I'm correct, you'll regret that decision in the future. Now, I started to mention a few minutes ago that financial advisors are unlikely to recommend private mortgage lending. I also mentioned part of the reason. They don't earn commissions if you invest directly in real estate, including in private mortgage loans. It actually decreases their commissions or fees since you're likely to move part of your assets out of the funds they've been helping you to manage. And an argument you might hear from financial advisors that will discourage you from investing directly in real estate is that it's not regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission or any other financial regulators around the world. That, by the way, is true. But the same is true of buying your own home. The purchase or sale of your home is not regulated by financial regulators. Does that mean owning a home is unsafe? Does it mean it's illegal? No. Owning real estate and loaning on real estate are mentioned in the financial regulations, and they are specifically exempt from those regulations. Now, you're thinking, why are the securities regulated? Aren't those regulations protect me? Again, but all real property, whether a home or an investment property, or in the case of a private mortgage loan, you have a deed of trust or mortgage that secures your investment, it gives you the right to take over that property if the owner or borrower, same person, defaults. With financial securities, in the very best case, you own a piece of paper. And more likely, you only have an electronically recorded transaction in your broker's records that you own the rights to a piece of paper. If that piece of paper is a record of owning stock in, let's say, General Motors Corp, Enron, WorldCom, Syntax, Brilliant, or hundreds of other companies that went into bankruptcy, you might want to ask your broker to get that piece of paper you're entitled to. It makes for good wallpaper. And I guess if you own enough of these worthless shares, you can start a wall of shame. Now, it's this lack of security in the financial markets that led to all of the securities regulations. So it's not real estate you have to worry about, it's the financial markets. If I lend to a company who owns and manages rentals or fix and flips or leased owned properties, which we've covered, and they go into bankruptcy, I get to own the property or properties. So contrary to the objection from your financial advisor, direct investment in real estate is much more secure than financial instruments. Now, before we define private mortgage lending, let's talk about a few other reasons why so few people even know that it exists. The big factor being that Wall Street and other financial markets in the world don't want you to know about private mortgage lending. To them, it's competition for investing your assets. The other reason is that your parents, teachers, friends, the media, and even authors of books on investing don't know about private mortgage lending. Now, mortgage lending has been viewed as the purview of banks, real estate funds, and wealthy individuals. Now, which of them would want you to know that there is such an alternative? Yes, the correct answer is none of them. None of them wants you to know about these high-yielding, secure alternatives. Maybe their arguments would be that we're much too unsophisticated investors to understand the complexity of making mortgage loans. My response, hogwash. They want to keep the profits for themselves. Besides, trying to invest in the universe of some 50,000 publicly traded stocks, about 10,000 investment funds, and probably over 1,000 ETFs today, in addition to the shorting strategies, call options, put options, straddles, and future contracts, no one will convince me that the financial markets are more transparent and easier to understand than the mortgage on an individual residential property that I can see, visit, and check its title history. For that matter, I can even get title insurance to increase my comfort level. My comfort that some robo-signing bank executive didn't get overly aggressive in foreclosing on the property and we need to give the property back to an earlier owner. Contrast that complexity in the financial markets to private mortgage loans, where in today's radio show, in 1 hour, you'll understand the different types of private mortgage loans. In our next show, we'll talk about how you can do mortgage loans on your own or partner with someone else who has experience. That, my friends, is what I meant when I said hogwash. So what is a private mortgage loan? Certainly, you know what a bank mortgage is, right? It's a loan taken by the owner of a property, a loan taken from a bank, securing that loan with a lien on the property. That lien assures the bank the property cannot be legally sold without first paying off the loan. Secondly, it gives the lender the right to take over the property in the event of borrower defaults. Now, a private mortgage loan is exactly the same as a bank mortgage, but done by a private individual or a company that's not a bank. And that reminds me of another factor as to why most people don't know why they can be private mortgage lenders. They've been convinced by the banksters that only banks are allowed to make mortgage loans. Interestingly, we use the term mortgage in most European languages, some version of the word hypothèque, even though there are two legal forms of liens, either a mortgage or deed of trust. Depending on where the property is located, that state or jurisdiction will have determined which form of lien can be used. In any given location, you don't have a choice. On the other hand, since a deed of trust allows for a much faster foreclosure if the borrower defaults, you do have a choice of locations of where to invest. In Arizona, where I invest, happens to be a deed of trust state. The United States is almost equally split, with about half of the states as mortgage states and half as deed of trust states. And you may recall from Michael Orr's comment that the mortgage states will take much longer to recover from the recession since those foreclosures take place in the court system. Now, imagine holding a mortgage in a country like Guatemala or Poland, which are known to have the longest court backlogs. It can take 3 years to get the property back. And you'll start to understand why I choose private mortgage lending in a deed of trust state where it takes 3 months or even less. Now, to help you understand private mortgage loans, let's first sit on the client side of my desk and look at it from the perspective of that client. He's sitting before me, he or she is sitting before me, wants to buy a property but needs financing. That client certainly knows that if I make that mortgage loan, I'll place a lien on the property to secure my interest, just like a bank would do. If they had sufficient down payment, good credit, regular documentable income, and will buy the property in their own name, not in the name of an LLC, they would probably buy that property using a traditional bank mortgage rather than coming to me. Banks can offer them 30-year loans at ridiculously low interest rates. Because the banks borrow at even lower rates from the central bank or even from unsophisticated investors. You know, the type of investor that doesn't know about this radio show yet. The reason they're contacting me or you as a private mortgage lender is they're missing one or more of those requirements to get a bank mortgage loan. Now, the cynics would say these clients are subprime clients. Well, you know, the kind that defaulted on their mortgage as soon as they lost their job or the economy started to take a downturn. That is, by the way, partially correct. Some of them would be considered subprime clients. Or, as I prefer to say, these are good people that want to own a home or invest in a property but can't get a mortgage loan. But in many cases, they're also real estate investors who have a number of properties, and banks generally limit the number of investment properties to 3 or 4, regardless of the person's income, their wealth, or their investment track record. So you may recall Warren Buffett made a recent comment that he would gladly invest in the housing market now if there's some economical way to do it. He confirms what I just told you. He may have billions in assets, but he, just like you or me, is limited in the number of mortgage loans he can get from a bank. There is, however, one situation where a private mortgage lender actually has an advantage over banks. That's on fix and flip properties, where the buyer, and thus the borrower, wants to borrow money quickly. He has no interest in a 30-year mortgage. Sorry about that pun there. No intention. No intended pun. Since they plan to sell the property in less than a year. For that matter, hopefully in less than 3 months. Now, let's walk back over to my side or your side of the desk and look from our perspective as private mortgage lenders. We have before us a client, a property buyer, who's interested in buying but needs financing. Now, your logical question will probably be, will these subprime clients or real estate investors default on their loan? And then I'll have to foreclose on them just like the banks did when some of the people lost their jobs or property values dropped? Okay, very key point. So let me break it down into the two key parts of that question. Will they default if they lose their job or something else goes wrong? Two answers. It could happen. If they're taking the mortgage loan to buy their own home, then just like a renter, they may not be able to pay their monthly payment, and you'll have to foreclose on them. If they're taking the mortgage loan to buy an investment property, then their job has little to do with it, so the property is providing them an income they don't want to lose. Will you need to second? This is the second part of it. Will you need to foreclose on the property just like the banks did? Well, here's a key difference in private mortgage lenders and the banks. Banks prefer to lend to buyers who occupy the property. We refer to them as owner-occupants. Most private mortgage lenders, however, prefer or some insist on lending only on investment property to avoid the risk of people losing their jobs and causing a default. Or they have high medical bills or some other occurrence that we might fit into the category of life happens. Secondly, in our next show, I'll share with you the things that banks did wrong that you should avoid doing. So the simple answer to what is a private mortgage loan, it's a mortgage loan made by a private individual or a company other than a bank. I guess you could even refer to it as non-bank mortgage financing. Let me remind you, you're tuned to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you've missed some of the prior shows, like the earlier ones on the first three real estate investment strategies, or if you want to re-listen to them, we maintain an archive of shows on wealthdna.us. If you'd like to get an email reminder of the shows, you can do one of two things, or both. Just send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us, and we'll keep you posted about future shows and events, or in the upper left-hand side of the screen, way up the up top, you'll see a picture of the Boomer and the Babe. Click the follow button. You'll be informed of each of the great shows in the Boomer and the Babe Network. And a reminder, during the show, we do ask you to welcome you to go ahead and ask questions. I suggest the chat window. We're going to be fairly limited in talking a lot of material to cover today. Surprisingly, it seems to be in each of these recent shows, we've got a lot to cover. The advantages and disadvantages of private mortgage lending. Now, I'm comparing to the other three real estate investment strategies. If I were comparing these private mortgage loans to financial securities, the list would be much longer. The advantages and disadvantages, both. The advantages would include security we talked about earlier and the ability to leverage your investment. On the disadvantage side, we'd be throwing in things like a minimum investment of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the inability to sell in the next 5 minutes. I try to cover some of those in our next show, by the way. So let's start with the advantages, again, comparing to the other three real estate investment strategies. First of all, unlimited demand. I should put the word unlimited in quotes, since that might be a slight exaggeration otherwise. You see, if every investor stopped investing in bonds, government securities, and CDs, there might be more private mortgage money available than needed. Specifically today, when banks are reluctant to lend and will not lend to companies on real estate transactions and have a very low limit on the number of properties that an investor can have with mortgages, I think I can safely say the demand is unlimited. Now, U.S. banks will tell you that they're making plenty of mortgage loans, contrary to what I just told you. But I can show you the data from the U.S. Federal, the U.S. Fed, and also the Department of Financial Institutions that is not true. Now, let me mention some data that was in a Phoenix Business Journal article just a few months ago. Alliance Bank, one of the larger state banks in Arizona, but it's small compared to those banks that are too big to fail, they increased their investment in municipal bonds from, you might want to just kind of put these numbers in perspective, $0 in 2009, okay, $312,000, not a huge amount, in 2010, and that rose to $76.7 million, okay, so we're talking like 2,000-fold increase in 2011. So that money is going into municipal bonds instead of into mortgage loans. I should add, by the way, besides today and the huge demand, I don't know of any time in history where every real estate investor who wanted to borrow private funds was able to find them. So it's unlikely that even if a few thousand investors listen to this show and join me in private mortgage lending, that we'll be competing with each other, or that supply would be so high that interest rates would decrease. So I would again say there's reasonably unlimited demand. Now, and I'll give you one more bit of evidence. In a recent meeting with about 50, 60 real estate investors, I took a brief survey. How many of them are currently private mortgage lenders? There were two of us in that group, two out of 50 or 60 people. On the other hand, when I asked the question, how many real estate investors in the room are looking for more private funds so that they could do more deals, about 30% of the group said they were. I'm a sample, but should give you an idea of investing as those currently provide private mortgage. Okay, second major edge is a biggie. It's the safest strategy of these four. In our next show, I'll talk a little bit more about relative safety of various investments, but I can share the bottom line. Owning something, whether an investment property or shares in a company, will have a higher return in the long term than loaning. And when I say long term, I'm talking about 15, 20 or more years. Loaning, whether on investment properties or lending to companies by funding their bonds, is safer than owning. So loaning is safer, owning tends to have a higher return. Now, the other three real estate investment strategies we've talked about, in each case, the investor is the owner. And thus, private mortgage lending is the safest of the four strategies. Okay, next advantage is you set the terms. Or another way to state this, you are the bank. For some reason, investors who are new to private mortgage lending have the most difficulty with this aspect. They keep asking what terms the bank will pay for these private mortgage loans, or whether the bank's position is ahead of theirs. I need to remind them they are the bank. There is no other bank involved. When's the last time you took a loan from a bank, with a mortgage loan, car loan, or set up a new credit card, and you told the bank what terms you wanted? Now, let's say you went to them and said, I'd like a mortgage for 40 years, 2% interest with no payments for the first 6 months just because I need to get settled, and I'd like no penalty for late payments until they're at least 2 months late. You might want to try this strategy just for fun. There are very few occasions you get to see a banker either totally confused or laughing hysterically. This will be one of them. Next advantage, you can sell or take a loan against the note. So you've made a mortgage loan and you decide you want some of that cash or all of it. Admittedly, most people realize they could sell a mortgage note. By the way, banks are doing it every year or two on properties that I have bank mortgages. What people don't realize is that they can take a loan against a mortgage note and thus retain the original note, its interest rate and terms, and take a loan at a lower interest rate or a lower amount. This strategy is called collateral assignment. You might want to keep track of that term. Because if you ask most title companies using that official phrase, collateral assignment, they'll know what you're talking about. But as one investor friend recently learned, when he asked a number of title companies and mortgage brokers about how he'd be able to take a loan against a note that he holds, they were confused. But at least they didn't laugh hysterically. Next big advantage, you can use OPM. This is clearly one of the key advantages, and as you know from the several shows we had on the topic of OPM, which, by the way, stands for other people's money, you know that it's one of my favorite strategies. Now, if your Aunt Sally has some cash available and she hasn't listened to the show and therefore doesn't know about private mortgage lending, she may be very willing to lend to you at, let's say, 3 to 4% if it's secured by a property. You, as a listener of the show, know that you can earn significantly more, and thus you can earn money on the money you borrow from Aunt Sally. Great strategy. Next advantage, passive income. Although rental properties and lease option properties also provide you passive income, that comes at a fairly high price in those cases, since you have to hire a property manager to maintain and keep your property earning money for you. Additionally, it's not uncommon that every year or so, the property manager asks you for additional money so you can renovate after the tenants leave, or even replace the air conditioner or patch a roof. With private mortgage lending, the only time you'll need to have additional funds available is if your borrower, remember your borrower is the owner of the property, happens to default. in which case you might have to complete the renovations, take over the operating expenses of the property. This will happen far less than with rentals and even less than with these lease option properties. Next big advantage, none of the four T's to deal with. And hopefully you remember what the four T's are from our discussion of rentals. Maybe another way of stating that this, it really is a passive investment. If the tenant in the property plugs a toilet, doesn't take care of the trash, or encounters termites, you won't receive a phone call in the middle of the night. You won't have to pay for it, and for that matter, you may never know it occurred. After all, you are the bank. As a homeowner with a mortgage or a car owner with a car loan, did you ever call your bank and tell them you're having a problem with toilets, termites, trash, or even tenants? Obviously not. Next big advantage, private mortgage loans can be used to sell a property at a premium. Now, this is probably the least known aspect of private mortgage lending. I won't explain it right now, since in a few minutes we'll be talking about all of the details on the way to do that. And my last advantage is a question mark. As usual, if you think some additional advantages, feel free to enter them in the chat window below or send me an email. I'll gladly add them. We're going to put an outline together of each of the shows on real estate, and we'll add it to that outline. Now, how about the disadvantages? I talked about the advantages of private mortgage lending. There are, must be, and there are some disadvantages. Well, first, and maybe the most important to most people, is you need money. Unlike a fix and flip, which could be done without any money, by finding a money partner who brings all the funds for the project. Well, private mortgage lending requires the investor have money. To make a $100,000 mortgage loan, you need to have $100,000. That said, it doesn't have to be your money. You could have several investors partnering together, or the investor you could be using OPM. Incidentally, have you ever heard of anybody investing in stocks, bonds, commodities, or other financial instruments without any money? So private mortgage loans are no different. Okay, here's a big disadvantage in most people's eyes, and I'll cover it in a reasonable amount of detail. The SAFE Act oversight. See, in October 2010, when the SAFE Act was implemented, private mortgage lenders in the U.S., whether for owner-occupied properties or investment properties, now have to be licensed. Clearly a key disadvantage. But before you stop listening to the show, don't get scared away. There are exemptions, and let me share a few of those exemptions so that you don't always have to be licensed. Now, prior to the SAFE Act, all mortgage lenders that financed owner-occupied residential properties had to either be licensed or work for licensed mortgage brokers. And we, as private mortgage lenders, were exempt because we were making commercial loans on residential properties. And that, by the way, is not an oxymoron. I didn't say loans on commercial properties. I said commercial loans on residential properties. See, a commercial loan is a loan made to a company. So the borrower has a sole proprietorship or LLC or a corporation. Then the loan to that investor, that borrower, is a commercial loan. It just happened to be on a residential property. But since the SAFE Act was implemented, that exemption went away. Now, there continue to be three key exemptions you need to know about. You might want to write these down. First, the lender makes fewer than five mortgage loans. Okay, they are exempt. So a casual lender, small volume, does not have to have a license. Second, a person lending on their own property, we'll talk about that shortly, is also exempt. And thirdly, a lender making their private mortgage loans through a licensed lender is exempt, regardless of how many loans they make. Now, I will warn you, if you ask 10 experts about mortgage lender licensing, you'll receive some agreement on these three exceptions, or exemptions, I should call them. Although some will tell you that private mortgage lenders are exempt as long as they don't charge an upfront fee. Points, we would call them. And the remainder will differ on which of these three are truly exemptions and which are not. So, despite a reasonably well-documented act, the SAFE Act is on par with most government regulations. The rules are as clear as mud. Now, the experts who are supposed to enforce the regulation, which is the Department of Financial Institutions in each state, will also give you different answers depending on who you ask and your specific situation. Okay, next big disadvantage, fully taxable. Yes, a key disadvantage. Both rentals and lease option properties allowed you to depreciate the property unless you had a non-cash expense deducted from your income. Both fix and flip and private mortgage lending are, unfortunately, fully taxable. That said, fix and flip is subject to more taxes than private mortgage lending. Since lending is defined as a passive activity, just like investing in the bond market, you're not subject to self-employment tax. Even if this becomes a major source of your income. Now, investors, on the other hand, who do several fix and flip properties are subject to self-employment tax. And as I mentioned when we talked about that second real estate investment strategy, it is more like a job than an investment, so you're taxed just like a job. Next big disadvantages, borrower might default. Now, this is one of those good news, bad news disadvantages. Clearly, if the real estate market declines, as it has been for the last 5 years, a defaulting borrower means that you take a loss on your loan if you choose to sell the property at the lower market price. When you take over that property, you own it free and clear. Now, for some reason, this little detour here, I guess, banks don't seem to understand this concept. When you foreclose on the property, you own it free and clear because your mortgage is the mortgage that's being now used to take over the property. One of my key priorities is to help banks understand the importance of owning a property free and clear versus having a mortgage loan. And I'm going to share that with you very shortly. And by the end of the show, you're going to understand it better than most banks do. As I mentioned, there is some good news to a borrower defaulting. If you loan them an amount below the property value, the borrower made improvements to the property, and property prices are rising, then you run a risk of making much more money than you invested in that loan. And if you're anything like me, that's the kind of risk you like, to make more money than you thought you would. And the last disadvantage, as always, is a question mark. Again, if you happen to think of some additional disadvantages, feel free to enter them in the chat window or send me an email. I'll gladly add them to the outline. I'll have them available after the show is archived. All right, next major topic. What are the various forms of private mortgage lending? First, and probably the best known, is hard money loans. Now, most real estate investors assume that private mortgage lending is synonymous with hard money lending. It isn't. Hard money lending is one form of private mortgage lending, probably the most commonly used form by fix and flip investors, and thus tends to be the best known. What is a hard money loan? I often joke the reason it's called a hard money loan is they're hard to get. But reality is it's called that because it is a private mortgage loan that's strictly based on the value of the property or the asset, the hard value of the hard asset. Okay? These lenders evaluate what they'll be able to sell the property for if it's fully renovated, and they'll generally finance 65 to 75% of that after repair value. And they'll generally finance up to 80 to 90% of the purchase price. They definitely won't do what banks did. With those margins of safety, they figure that even if they lend to an inexperienced investor and the investor defaults, they'll be able to sell the property quickly at a value at or above their loan value. Now, what do they charge? Well, most hard money lenders charge rates of between 15 and 18%, and the number of points they charge varies from 0 to 5%, so the money is expensive. But really, it's the only option for investors buying at auction, other than those investors having sufficient cash of their own. The second form, probably not too well known, is transactional funding. This is a very small percentage of all private mortgage loans made. It's basically a loan for one day or maybe up to a week. It can go up to a month or two. It's transactional funding is used primarily by wholesalers. They've already identified their ultimate buyer at the time they're ready to close on their purchase. So they buy it once they know who they're going to sell it to. Okay, but in the old days, like a few years ago, banks allowed them to assign that contract, that purchase contract, and say, okay, I'm not buying it. I've decided that Joe's going to buy it, my buyer, and they would then charge them some fee for doing that. And the other thing I should say, the other thing that was allowed is you had these back-to-back or double escrows where the funds brought by the ultimate buyer would be used to finance the purchase by the wholesaler. Well, somewhere around the time the lending freeze during the Great Recession, which was about the fall of 2008, contract assignments and double escrows went away, and thus transactional funding was born. It's a very lucrative form of private mortgage lending. Problem is having steady enough stream of back-to-back deals to help your to keep those funds invested. You want your money working for you, right? Most lenders, by the way, charge about 2% plus administrative fees for using the funds for up to a week. Now, if the transactional funding might go out to a month or 2 months because of some seller restriction, that generally means, what I mean by seller restriction is some bank has a restriction that they impose about selling the property right away, then the lender will actually add an additional 1.5% per month, so kind of hard money rates on top of the 2%. Okay, third form of private mortgage lending, and this is kind of the one that's based on both asset and on borrower. It's the most common form of private mortgage lending, like we do. It's really kind of hard money lending. Based on bank, hard money lenders, just their asset values. Bank lending focus primarily on the buyer, and specifically their credit score, their employment income, availability of cash, etc. The fourth type of, and this is where I want to focus a little bit of time here, spend a little bit of time, is the seller financing. This is the fourth type of private mortgage loan, seller financing. And I was alluding to this earlier when I talked about somebody being able to, the seller of a property, financing the sale. So the seller of the property, and here I mean the owner, not the realtor, finances a portion of the sales price by carrying a private mortgage loan against the property they're selling. They are, in essence, carrying a mortgage for the buyer. Because there's a much larger number of people who want to own properties than buyers who qualify for bank mortgages, especially today, the demand for these properties is significantly higher. And if someone had ideal credit, if someone has less than ideal credit, or they had a foreclosure, bankruptcy, short sale in the last few years, their chance of getting a mortgage loan is near zero. And by the way, there are millions of these people. This doesn't stop the seller from financing those buyers so that they can buy their property. Now, because there's a much higher demand and much smaller supply of seller-financed homes, those sellers can charge a premium. How about that? Economic principles at work again. Now, there is a very important and a very large category of home sellers that are not able to use seller financing. When I say a large category, I mean like 80% of people. Those are the people that have a mortgage loan on the property. See, in order to use seller financing, they have to own the home free and clear or pay off the mortgage loan at the time of the sale. This obviously excludes a lot of people. And that's the key reason there's such a small supply of seller-financed homes. Now, I mentioned earlier that banks don't seem to understand the importance of owning a property free and clear. Well, since they own the property free and clear after foreclosure, if they connected the dots, they'd realize they could do seller financing on those foreclosed homes and charge a premium price by doing so. Unfortunately, banks traditionally viewed seller financing as a bad thing. You see, seller financing was competition to bank loans. So you wouldn't want banks to enter a business that competes with them, would you? Well, the answer is they could or they should, and this is what we affectionately refer to as the TACT program. I haven't shared that program with you yet on the show. It's on a list of topics for the future. Okay, the next major category is owner financing. So this is the fifth type of private mortgage lending, owner financing. This is very commonly assumed to be synonymous with seller financing, since the seller is indeed the owner. They are not the same. The key difference is that the owner financing can be done even with a mortgage on the property. Yes, this may be the first time you've ever heard that it was possible to finance the sale of a property and leave your existing mortgage in place. But that's the reason you've become a regular listener to this show. To know that investments, the types of investments that wealthy people take advantage of and financial journalists don't know anything about. Now, depending on the part of the world or even state you live in, the terminology for this type of contract differs. The most common terms are land contract, contract for deed, bond for deed, or agreement for sale. Now, regardless of the terminology, they are the same. They all allow you to sell the property with your existing mortgage in place. Now, very important, I don't want to imply there's absolutely positively no risk involved in the strategy. I'd highly suggest you employ a real estate lawyer or very experienced investor work with you on the sale with owner financing. Most mortgage loans have a due on sale clause, which says the mortgage bank can foreclose on the property if you sell it without paying off that mortgage. That said, a properly constructed owner financing contract sells the property conditional on the mortgage being paid off. So the buyer doesn't become the full owner until the mortgage is paid off, which could be 3 or 5 or even 29 years later. Clearly, the most important thing to make sure is that the mortgage payments continue to be made each month. Now, in my humble opinion, this will be the single biggest opportunity while the housing market struggles to recover nationally and banks are so reluctant to lend. Owner financing. Okay, the sixth type of private mortgage loan is an installment sale. And the first thing I should mention is an installment sale is affectionately recognized by the U.S. tax code and likely also recognized in other countries. It's being different than a traditional sale. You see, an installment sale can be used for selling a car, a home, or even a refrigerator if you wanted to. And if you're older than about 40 years old, you may recall something that's now being reintroduced, the layaway plan. That is, in essence, a form of installment sale that stores used to use. Now, the reason installment sale is mentioned in the tax code is that the date of the sale and thus the taxation is not the same as a traditional sale. See, in a traditional sale, you have a single purchase transaction takes place at the time you sold the item. Now, if I sell an investment property on an installment sale, and let's say in the simplest case, I ask for 5 equal payments of 20% of the sale price over a period of 5 years. Well, tax-wise, I only recognize 20% of my profit in each tax year. So the gain or loss, and thus the taxes on the property sale, is spread across several tax years. Now, incidentally, if I make a cash offer on a property, it doesn't mean I have to pay one large lump sum to buy it. I could make a cash offer with 5, 10, or even 100 payments. As a buyer, that means I don't need all the cash at once. And for the seller, they don't have to pay tax on the entire gain at once. Now, does that sound like a win-win? Now, how many realtors have mentioned this to you ever? How about financial advisors? I'm not hearing any answers other than none and never and a lot of head shaking. I guess that's why you listen to the Wealth DNA radio show. Okay, seventh type of private mortgage loan, and this is one I've in essence already touched on, is note buying. I mentioned you can make a private mortgage loan, you can sell it, or you can take a loan against it. So naturally, another form of private mortgage lending is buying mortgage loans that others have made. And there's no reason you can't buy these notes from banks as well as private individuals. There are, and I assure you, thousands of banks around the country that have millions of underwater mortgage loans they'll gladly sell you. And while you're shopping around, ask for a substantial discount on the purchase price. I can occasionally help you with these if you're looking for some. Even the loans we make are seldom sold. We don't usually sell the loans we make. Some of our lenders might be willing to sell some of their notes since they know we can place their money into another mortgage loan soon afterwards. And type 8 is, as usual, a question mark. If you think of other types of private mortgage lending I missed, let me know. For those listeners that just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the earlier portion on the archive. If you missed prior shows, you can find it on the archives, wealthdna.us. Today, we're answering the question, should you invest in private mortgage loans? And we are running a little bit behind schedule, and apologies, we're going to overrun our 1 hour. Unfortunately, I did forewarn our producer. A lot of material to cover, surprisingly, just a lot to cover. I mean, it was not a complex strategy, just a lot of information I'd like to share with you. Let's talk about the returns, and we'll cover that before we get into the key skill requires. But I figure there's a few people out there listening saying, well, if the returns aren't high enough, why should I bother listening to the rest of the show and learn some new skills? Okay, fair enough. See, private mortgage loans are ideal for fairly conservative investors. You know, the type that might invest in bank CDs. Remember, CDs we refer to as certificates of depreciation. Or they might invest in treasury bills or bonds. Now, I won't try to convince you that private mortgage loans are quite as safe as a piece of paper backed by the nearly bankrupt U.S. Federal Deposit Insurance Company. or treasury bills are backed by a printing press, the U.S. Treasury, and not the U.S. Fed. On the other hand, I will remind you, they are backed by real estate. One of the risks you have is you actually may earn more than you planned if the borrower defaults. I can assure you, you don't get positive risk like that with those other safe investments. Now, the range of returns you can earn are anywhere from 4 to 18%, so from 4% to 18% annually. And since you set the terms, as I mentioned, you're not likely to ask your borrower to pay you interest at the end of a one-year or three-year or 10-year private mortgage loan. You're going to want interest payments monthly or quarterly. Now, did you ever ask your bank to give you monthly interest on the CDs? That's another great way to get your banker to laugh. Now, clearly the spread between 4 and 18% is pretty large, so I need to clarify a little bit more about what determines that return. And I guess I'll break it up into three categories. If you're looking for a very safe loan, you'll want to lend on income-producing property with monthly interest payments fully backed by the company owning it and get a personal guarantee from one or more of the principals of that company. These loans will pay you between 4 and 8%, depending on the duration of the loan and the profitability of the particular property. Now, if you're willing to take more risk that the payments will stop if the investor defaults, then you should expect a higher return. If you're even willing to do your own due diligence, find your own borrowers and take on the risk, do it all on your own, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to charge between 12 and 18%. And the area in between the 8 to 12% is if you're partnering with another investor who does most of the due diligence, brings you in investment deals, then you'll earn between 8 and 12%, depending on the duration of the loan. Now, if you're currently investing in corporate bonds, which might be considered a similar risk profile, even though they're not secured, by the way, corporate bonds are also a loaning strategy, as private mortgage lending is, and you're getting paid more than 5 to 6%, chances are you're taking a far higher risk than you would with any private mortgage loans, even those paying 18%. Okay, last topic is the skills you'll need as a private mortgage lender. Where are we in the economic cycle is the first skill. Now, I didn't ask that question when we talked about rentals or fix and flips. I did mention it with lease option. Neither of those two strategies is particularly sensitive to the economic cycle. And if we're at the bottom of a recession or exiting one, and I would say that's true, you know, in the last few years here, a year and a half here in the U.S., it's actually a very good time to invest in private mortgage loans. On the other hand, if everything is going great, there's full employment, banks are willing to lend anybody that wants money, that's a good time to just kind of finish up the private mortgage loans you have outstanding and maybe extend some of them that are particularly strong borrowers. But otherwise, I wouldn't start up new ones. Now, on the other hand, I may be overly sensitive to the fact that we've just had a very deep housing downturn. It's only happened twice in history in total, this recent one, and then the last one was the Great Depression. So chances are that, again, I'm being overly sensitive, and even if you make those loans at the top of the market, you'll probably come out okay. Second skill, the SAFE Act. I talked about this a little bit, obviously, already. But if you're and specifically the exemption, that's going to be important to understand. But if you're planning to do a lot of private mortgage lending, it'd be a good idea to become familiar with the SAFE Act and then even consider becoming licensed. But don't assume that if you go through the licensing process, if you go through the licensing process, you'll get to know the SAFE Act. It's not a topic covered during the licensing process. Okay, third skill, HOPA, H-O-E-P-A. That's Home Owner Something Protection Act, Equity Protection Act, I think is what it stands for. It's one of the key advantages going through the licensing process as I did. You become familiar with the number of housing and mortgage related regulations. One of the most important, that's why I mentioned it, is HOPA, H-O-E-P-A, which can be basically summarized as protecting against predatory lending. Now, if making mortgage loans at 12, 15, or 18% sounds like it might be viewed as predatory, you're right. And it's surprising how many private mortgage lenders charge those rates for owner-occupied properties, which is clearly in violation of HOPA. Lender, beware. Number four, in terms of skills, is other key regulations. Now, as I mentioned, the licensing process helps you become aware of these regulations. Alternatively, you should work with a licensed lender to help keep you out of trouble. Number five skill, which form of lending are you going to choose? Do you plan to offer seller or owner financing the property you're selling? Do you plan to move some of your assets from the financial markets into private mortgage lending? Do you prefer to partner with an experienced lender, or are you going to increase your returns and therefore your risk by doing it yourself? I won't make those decisions for you. You need to feel comfortable enough with the information we're covering to decide which is the best for you and your risk tolerance. Number six skill, what terms will you accept? Remember I said you set the terms? Well, you have to decide what they are. Will you do 1 year, 5 year, 10, or even 30-year mortgage loans? Will you finance owner-occupants, investors, or both? Do you prefer to stick with the safest loans, or are you willing to take a little more risk to earn a very high? Number seven skill, probably one of the biggest hurdles that new private mortgage lenders face, the borrow. In other words, clients. Now, once you've done several loans, your existing clients will contact you, and your word gets around, you're likely to have an ongoing stream of borrowers contacting. Probably the most cost-effective way to get started is to either partner with an experienced lender or mention it to your network that you're a private mortgage lender. Most will have no idea what that is, but those involved in real estate will contact you to learn more. Number eight, evaluating the loans. Okay, so the borrowers now are starting to contact you. You've got to evaluate each potential deal. Make sure you're not lending more than the property's worth or lending to a crook. And by the way, I will admit, that does happen. Or that the interest being paid on your loan is below the cash flow from the property because the buyer will not hang around very long if they're paying more than they're earning. The official terminology for this, by the way, and you might want to jot this down, is determining the mortgageable equity. Number nine skill, preparing the note and deed of trust. Now, every title company has a boilerplate note and deed of trust, but you'll soon find if you compare them that each is a little bit different. Each has some protection or terms that others don't. Well, you may have to tailor one of them or draft a form or forms of your own, the note and deed of trust, two separate forms. Number 10, filing information tax returns. Just like with any other real estate investment, you do need to provide 1098s to each of your borrowers, 1099s to each of your lenders, and 1096s along with the originals of the other forms to the IRS. It's a little tedious, but it's fairly straightforward after you've done it a few times. The forms just seem a little scary the first time you're filling out a red income tax form. Number 11 skill, finding a partner. See, an alternative to handling a lot of these more difficult aspects yourself is to find a knowledgeable, reputable partner. I'll give you the same suggestion I mentioned regarding finding property managers. Make sure you review their rating with the Better Business Bureau. If they got a poor rating, go find another one. Number 12, funding the transaction. Once you have the deal and the terms are agreeable to you, you'll certainly want to fund the transaction through a title company. You not only want a lender's title policy to make sure that the deal you're funding is in first position and that all of the documents are properly endorsed prior to funding, use a title company. Now, lender beware again. Some real estate investors will say, well, I'll give you a little higher interest rate and we'll save the costs of closing through a title company. The choice and the risks are yours. I don't recommend it. Number 13, the foreclosure process. Now, even though, as I mentioned, it's very unlikely your first few borrowers will default, you should become familiar with the foreclosure process in your area, where the area you'll be investing is what I mean, and specifically the costs involved. Now, in Arizona, I typically pay about $2,500 for a title company to handle a foreclosure. I don't need a lawyer here. Surprisingly, since banks do a lot more foreclosures than I do, they seem to get a quantity discount. They pay about $6,000 for each foreclosure. Somehow, the logic escapes me. Managing a property. Now, I won't, and this is the 14th and last of the skills, I won't go through all the details. This is what you need to do if you have to take over the property. It's essentially the same as if you were going to rent it out. Do a fix and flip or a lease option. The details are available in our archives for each strategy. Okay, let me summarize. We've covered a lot of material. We've overrun a little bit. As with the radio show we did on the other three investment strategies, there's a lot more information to cover than we can fit in 1 hour. We covered each of the aspects of private mortgage loans, and yet I suspect you're not quite ready to get started, even if this sounds like an investment strategy you'd like to pursue. To make the private mortgage lending process a little clearer, we'll do the next show in the form of a seminar. We'll walk you through the process of becoming a private mortgage lender. Now, I'll just remind you what we've already covered. First, we covered why you haven't heard about private mortgage lending before. We defined it. We covered the advantages and disadvantages versus the three other real estate investment strategies. We covered the various forms of private mortgage lending, from hard money loans to owner financing to note buying. And as I mentioned, at this point, you probably know far more about private mortgage lending than most bankers do. We covered the returns you can expect and the skills you'll need. On the next show, we're going to make it in the form of a seminar. It'll be a learn to earn a higher return seminar. We'll cover how banks make money. We'll talk a little bit more about the loan versus own strategy, and we'll talk about the questions you need to ask when you evaluate any investment. And then we'll evaluate private mortgage loans using that framework. And unlike other seminars you've probably attended, we're going to cover the legal aspects, a little bit more on licensing, we'll cover the taxes, and even the risks. Most importantly, we'll cover the process of making a mortgage loan all on your own. Of course, you can still partner, but you'll be able to, at the end of the show, and that's my goal, at the end of the show, you'll be able to make your very first private mortgage loan. Now, since the U.S. just celebrated Independence Day last week on the 4th of July, I guess I should add that private mortgage lending just might be the strategy you need to reach financial independence. And of course, I should mention that a good way to increase your return and lower your risk, tune into the show every 2 weeks. We'll challenge you, share the investment fundamentals, some great ideas inspire you to be as wealthy as you want to be. The next Wealth DNA radio show is the fourth Monday of July. That's July 23rd. That's a Monday as usual, 8 o'clock Arizona time. Same place, same time. And remember, archives of past shows and this one are available on wealthdna.us. If you have some questions, suggestions, whether it's about real estate or other investments, if you haven't received emails reminding you about the show, just send an email to me, Ron@wealthdna.us, and we'll keep you posted about future shows and events. By the way, the next show on the Boomer and the Babe Network is at 10 a.m. this morning with Hogan Hilling and Al Watts on parenting, something all of us wish we had learned before the kids were born. And if you're not already doing it, consider a direct investment in real estate, and maybe private mortgage lending is perfect for you. Happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.